Welcome back, everyone. This is Eric Elveson with the Digital Education Podcast, where I have opportunities to talk with, record conversations with very interesting people that I get to meet doing leadership, doing innovation, and particularly in education. And today I'm with Chris Everett. Chris is a culture design strategist for Engage to Learn. We've done a podcast with his boss, Shannon Burke. He's been an educator in Texas for 20 years, serving at multiple levels within the school structure. He's been a classroom teacher, a coach, campus administrator, district administrator, and a director at a regional education service center. And now he is culture design strategist. And Chris, that's where I want to jump in, because your website says this, and I thought it was great that they even define it and give you a little bit. Your website says this title cannot better describe his role within the organization, because our efforts as partners with districts is to fundamentally change the culture of learning in classrooms. So what does it mean to be a culture design strategist, and what are the cool things that you get to do on a daily basis?
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you for having me. I'm excited about this conversation, and my title is culture design strategist. Everybody gets a good laugh out of that, because it is a made-up title. You're not going to find that on LinkedIn anywhere except for Engage to Learn folks. But the easiest connection to what people already know is project manager, right? So most people associate that with just logistics and trying to make sure the project runs well, and that's definitely part of what I do. But culture design strategist is really descriptive in that all of this work, the work that Engage to Learn does, the work that I get to do, is really fundamentally about culture. And that takes a lot of shapes and a lot of forms, but at the root of it, our intention and our philosophy and our approach is about culture. And so, you know, the broad spectrum of things that I get to do is, you know, I get to meet with partners initially and just brainstorm and talk and ideate about, you know, what is it that they're trying to achieve? What's the challenge that they're bumping up against? And begin to help them to see the connection to culture and how we can impact those situations through that lens. Then when we kind of get through that ideation phase, I mean, I'm in charge of taking it to, okay, well, what does that look like in real service? How are we going to come? What's the level of intensity that the partnership is going to take on in order to achieve those goals? And we do that collaboratively with the district or with the business partner, whoever it is we're working with. And then the real project management side of it is that my sole goal is to make sure that the people we're supporting are successful. We want them to be the hero of the story. This really is not about Engage to Learn. It's about them. And we're just supporting them with our expertise and process and resource, right, and philosophy. So I make sure that all the pieces for those partners work. So a lot of standing meetings, a lot of ensuring that the coaches that we assign to those projects or the facilitators that we assign to those projects are prepped and ready and understand the context of the situation they're going into, just like I know it, having been a part of all those conversations. And so the real concise way to say it is it's tip to tail, ensuring that the partner is successful from the beginning, making sure the design is right, to implementation and making sure that everything's going the way that they need it to go to be successful.
So when people reach out to you, and this is something that I'm interested in wondering, like you talk about a process. I think one of the questions I have, you know, and as I've talked with Shannon and read some of your work and interacted with you, you talk quite a bit about the process. Whereas when I talk to people, everybody wants or seemingly wants a model. Tell us what to do. Tell us how to do it. And where you talk, even sharing like a little bit about your title and what you do, you talk about the process. You talk about, in some ways, being a catalyst. You talk about the support, the encouragement, the coaching along the way. Like, how does process model fit, you know, with all of this kind of stuff, with, you know, changing the culture of learning in the classroom, but even just the culture of our education system?
Well, it's a great it's a great question, Eric, ultimately. And it's so interesting, the timing of the question, because I just finished this book called Chasing Excellence. And it's by a CrossFit coach. His name is Ben Bergeron, very successful. And it's so, I listened to it because it was recommended by some CrossFit friends of mine. But what I took from the book was that his whole philosophy of coaching is around mindset, which is really what we're after in partnership, is to help people understand that this is a change in mindset. Transformation is a change in mindset. Modernization is a change in mindset. Any particular initiative or innovation that a district is chasing or wants to chase requires a change in mindset. And Ben Bergeron talks about his process, right? He uses examples, Alabama football or New England Patriots football, and that you have to be committed to the process, not the end goal or not the benchmarks along the way necessarily, but the down and dirty work of fundamentally, Eric, behavior, right? That's where we try to go down to. Culture is all about behavior. And there is a very distinct process for changing behavior. And there are three kind of types of problems, and we talk about this, and actually Shannon, you may want to follow up with her at some point in time. She's writing a book about the five leadership levers. And the general context of that is that there are three types of problems: tactical, strategic, and adaptive, right? As educators, we are really good at thinking at the tactical and strategic level. Like, we need a plan, strategic plan. We want to employ this strategy, or we go to a conference and we see this program or this tool, and that's a tactic, right? We want to employ that tactic, and that's going to get us to where we want to go. But if you look over the history of education, at how many of those tactics and strategies have been employed, I mean, it's a revolving door, right? It's where we get, initiative fatigue and program paralysis and all of those kinds of concepts that are real, because people are just overwhelmed by the number of tactics and strategies that people are well-meaning trying to use to get to change or to improvement or to implement this innovative program. But really, it's an adaptive issue, right? It's a behavioral issue, and we can't enact behavioral change or adaptive change using tactics or strategies. We have to use adaptive strategies. And our experience has been the process is the way you do that. Now, the process is succinctly collaborative design, right? So involving people in the design of what the behaviors need to be, and then adding clarity of methods, right? So knowing not just what the behaviors are, but really what that looks like in real time, and then coaching for growth, right? So most of us are attuned to providing trainings, professional development, professional learning, and that's fine. As a former district level person, I spent a lot of money on training, but I never really followed that with coaching, and that's the missing link for a lot of folks. The end of the process is ensuring that you get through the difficulty of a paradigm change behaviorally through collaborative coaching, someone there to help you walk through it. And if we could really begin to help people understand that process, then I think as an educational system, we could generate some significant changes to the learner experience, which is, Engage to Learn's ultimate end goal is for the learner experience for kids to be exactly what it needs for them to thrive in an unpredictable future.
So Chris, as you work with schools, and as you work in these places, and I appreciate you because you put me in touch with a school that you work with, Alamo Heights, Independent School District, and had the opportunity to visit there and see what they're doing and hear their story and hear the story of how they've walked alongside, or how Engage to Learn has walked alongside of them, and the professionalism, and to really see the relationships, the collaboration, the incubation of innovation, the changes that start small that can grow bigger, that take time to implement. And they talked quite a bit about, you know, kind of phasing up. And I'm interested in this as you see innovation, as you've seen change, as you walk through this process. I often come away from either it's classroom change or school change or even district change, where it becomes this really significant initiative. And this is what we're going to do. And oftentimes as a classroom teacher, it feels like this is something we're going to do to you. And and then all of a sudden you get into it and it's like, yeah, this makes sense. I could do this. And maybe it's a year in or a 2 year in, and then all of a sudden it just disappears. Like what is the work that happens in this process that, or what have you seen in these ebbs and flows of change that, you know what, it takes time and it takes time going through implementation dips. And oftentimes the innovative change, it takes time to start small to get big. I mean, give me some thoughts on what you think about some of that stuff based on the schools and the districts that you're working with.
You know, this is where it really fundamentally comes back to culture, right? So, and we harp on this a lot with folks that you've got to be, culture is going to happen, right? One way or another. It is happening. It's never something that if you're not thinking about it, well, it doesn't matter. Well, it does matter because culture is happening as a result of you're not thinking about it. You can do too little, just like I just described, but you can also do too much, right? Try too hard, to make something happen. And that's where people get that feeling of this is being done to me. If you're really intentional, you're involving people in the process of designing culture. And so one error that we see sometimes people making is they don't involve enough people in the process of deciding who we're going to be, right? Whether that's deciding what the innovation is or whether that's deciding, you know, how we're going to behave as a faculty and staff or as a district. This applies at every level. Classroom teachers, I think, don't do this enough in classrooms, honestly, with kids. It's involving them in the creation of the culture of those particular classrooms. District leaders certainly probably don't go deep enough in involving people to determine what kind of culture that system is going to represent. So the sweet spot is you involve the right number of people, and it's collaboratively designed. You're not trying to, this is a really important nuance for us at Engage to Learn, is we're not trying to get people to buy into something. We really believe buy-in's a myth. What we want is for people to own whatever it is, the direction, right? That's why we're pretty much program agnostic. Our description is that we're going to help you scale innovation. That innovation could be school improvement, right? We need to do something different here to solve this particular problem. Or it could be STEM, it could be literacy, it could be one-to-one, whatever it is. But we're going to help you involve the right number of people so that your organization can move forward together, right? The other thing that I think people do a lot, Eric, is they try to do too much all at one time. So we talk about a responsible rollout. So this is hard for folks because especially after the design process, oftentimes they're like, yes, that is it. We want that in every classroom today. And it seems rational to think, okay, let's just do that right now. We should have been doing that all along. Let's just do that everywhere right now. But a responsible rollout is a better way of ensuring that the innovation actually reaches success at every level, because there are things you have to work through, right? You have to coach people, so you really shouldn't train anybody on a new innovation unless you can support them with coaching. So sometimes you don't have the capacity to train everybody, and you certainly don't have the capacity to coach everybody, at least initially. So what we typically help people to do is to structure that out, and whether you call them cohorts or phases or whatever you want to call them. And while we're phasing that out over 3, maybe 5 years, depending upon the size of the district or the size of the innovation, we are helping you to build the capacity internally. So looking at your systems, looking at how you can develop people to sustain the innovation long after we're gone. Our model, honestly, and it's the one thing I loved about Engage to Learn when I joined, was that we're not interested in being your partner forever. We want to We want to help you design correctly, effectively, involving the right number of people, and then help you train and coach while building capacity so that you can take over and sustain that for as long as you believe and hold to those values, right? So if we can help you build those structures, align your systems, all those things, then we feel good about going on to the next innovation that we can help scale.
So let me, I've got a big picture question for you, but I want to let that hang out there for a little bit. Because I know you do a lot of work with facilities too, you know, with school districts or schools that are, you know, going on a big building plan and readjusting things. Like what are maybe a couple of the suggestions or what are the things that's like, you know what, if we're looking at this whole idea of culture, creation of culture, even the redesign of learning based on the new things that we know, you know, oftentimes people jump in and say, hey, we're just going to build a new building and everything will change. And how much, like, what's the preparation? What are the conversations or what are the things that you learn that even, you know, as people look at just even a small facility like a classroom redesigned to a huge facility like a brand new school, like, what are the things that you push people on or that you've learned as you've worked on kind of even just the housing of how we do some of this stuff?
Yeah. So this has been my favorite part of the work is I'm a systems guy. I didn't know that until I worked in a district that didn't have much system, and it made me a crazy person and immediately began to build systems. So when I look at facilities and whether that's, the entire grouping of new builds, furniture refresh, reconstruction, renovation, modernization, whatever you want to call it, all the way to like technology implementation, one-to-one, those kinds of things. Oftentimes, there's a traditional way of going about that work, that planning. In architects, we partner with several architects, and they have admitted this, that because they're not educators, they realize they haven't been really asking the right questions. They ask questions like, you know, how much storage do you need? You know, how much space do you need? What kind of desks would you like to have? But what we do is push people to think before any of that, let's get crystal clear on what you want the learner experience to be and why. Like, what are the behaviors that you're trying to ensure can happen in these spaces? Whether it's new furniture, okay, you're going to get new furniture. That's great. Why? What is it that you're hoping in the learner experience will be different? Or what are you hoping to engage students in behaviorally that this new furniture can support or optimize, right? And that's the formula that we really push people to think about. A well-defined learner experience down to teacher behaviors and learner behaviors. Not a script, but a framework for how the experience should be designed with very specific best practices. We use 12 best practices that are research-based, mapped to that experience. If we know what that is, and we can be crystal clear on that, and we can all agree, yes. And that's not just the CNI director, right? That's district level, campus level, teacher level, community level folks weighing in on what that experience needs to be. And we believe that experience best prepares kids for an unpredictable future. So it's way beyond just, you know, state assessment scores or whatever. If we agree on that, then it's pretty easy actually to say, okay, if these are the behaviors, what does the design of the microenvironment of the building need to be to support that experience or to optimize that experience? And when we do that, you can draw very straight lines from the experience to elements within the microenvironment meant to optimize the experience, right? So if you do both of those things, you're way ahead of the game, because what's going to have to happen next is that teachers have to occupy those spaces. And so a lot of times what we're starting to see, and we hear architects talk about this quite a bit, is that the people that go into those spaces weren't a part of the design. They didn't have anything to do with that. Either they weren't hired yet, or they were on a different campus, or they just weren't a part of the process. And they're left out, and they have to walk into this space, and they go, okay, well, now I got to make learning happen here. I know how I did learning in my old place, and these elements don't look the same, but I'm going to make them work the same way. I've probably had this conversation with 50 architects in the last 2 years, and I always ask that question: have you ever walked into a space that you were really proud of, and when you saw it being used, you were like, "Wait, that's not how that space was intended or designed." And so the gap is we haven't taken that last step, which is to train and coach the inhabitants of those new spaces to know how to design learning based on that ideal experience using those elements. And if we can, the more we can talk about that defines culture, right? That is a huge component of the overall culture of that particular building and ultimately the system that building is a part of.
So let me ask this last question, because I know it's the big picture stuff that we talk about, but I think, and hopefully in the future we get to have some more of these conversations, but it's really ultimately the first place I met you was Rex Miller's kind of mind shift experience, when we were in Los Angeles and, talking about ecosystems and systems. And I think, you and I enjoy much of the same stuff and same conversations. And, when we think about that micro level of the classroom and the teacher and the well-being and the health and the success of the teachers or success of students is so dependent upon that well-being, the success and the engagement of teachers. And then we go all the way up to like the state policy levels and you're at, in a state like Texas, or I'm in a state like California, where it's pretty significant the impact that, the states have on what's happening. And then you add in the federal stuff. Like, what are some of the things that you're pondering about or wondering about as you think about, culture change in the classroom, better schools, high quality districts, and then just greater opportunities as you think about the interaction of all of these systems that kind of, play out in our education system as a whole?
Yeah. I think the key thing, and I've spent a lot of time just in my head as a natural introvert, I think a lot about how, if we're really going to make this thing go. And, education is a long history, and it is pretty complex as a system, as a profession. Definitely, if you're thinking about it all the way to the legislator level, and I think if we could refocus everyone on the ideal learner experience, right? If we could just get people to really begin to focus in on what is the ideal learner experience. I think there's some differing beliefs about that, whether you go from the, the much more traditional kids just need to know how to read, write, and do math, and all that other stuff is frou-frou, we don't need them to think critically or whatever, to the point of, we don't want any kind of parameters on education, and we just want it to be kind of free and let happen what happens. I think in there somewhere, if we could come to an agreement of what's ideal for kids to experience on a daily basis, it's going to prepare them to do whatever it is next. We get so fixated on kids doing well on a test, unfortunately, that I'm not sure anybody's really been able to show is predictive of success in an unpredictable future. I think if we could just deal with the experience being meaningful and relevant and authentic every day, that would go a long way to making sure that the goals that the legislature has are met. Right, whatever that is, the goals of the community are met. More importantly, the goals of these kids that are in these systems, 16 to 20,000 hours, kindergarten to 12th grade, walk away looking back going, dang, that was a good experience. I got value from that because I see my ability or my capacity to adapt and to thrive in this world that the only thing we can guarantee is going to change. I mean, I think we used to be able to say schools can predict the kinds of things kids need to be able to do when they leave school. And I'm just not sure we can do that anymore. I think we have to assume responsibility, preparing them for a world that's going to rapidly change all around them all the time. And that's okay. I think we just have to think differently about what that experience needs to be every day in order to have that happen.
Well, and it's interesting, you just kind of even go back to where we start and having that conversation about culture. That it's, you know, if we've got a future that's unpredictable, you know, kind of the, what they say, the VUCA, you know, volatile, unpredictable, and all that kind of stuff. Is then how do we create that culture that allows us to have the conversations, to do the preparations together, to engage each other in this place, to be able to kind of set some of the, whether it's stability that comes from the relationships and stability that comes from the culture of doing the work together, that allows us then to, you know, propel students out into that, into that world that's, you know, so much more unpredictable than what we grew up in or what we even started our careers in.
Yeah, 100%. And if we can do that, Eric, I mean, gosh, if we can establish the culture of the system, that's the hard part, in my opinion. Everything else is pretty easy, I think, because then we're just have a moral obligation to line the system up to support that culture. Right. Everything's got to go through that filter. If you have that one thing, that's all pretty easy to do. It's getting to that one thing that's not always easy, because it does require some of us to think differently. But that process can get us there. We have stories of people who came in thinking one way, and not as a result of us pressing on them, engaged to learn or whatever, but through the process, they have had the opportunity to think more about things and gets us out of our tactical response mode. And you really think about behaviors, and that allows us the space cognitively to kind of come together on some of this stuff. You know, the issue is time, right? How do we mine enough time for us to do that? But that's a really important question that we've got to find an answer to so that we can. I think the benefits of it are just too important to not.
So Chris, let me just ask a final question. Is, you know, we often, and the talk around education right now is maybe not overtly positive about what we're doing and how we do it. And, you know, and I've definitely gone all in my professional life to that. I love my profession. I love what I get to do. I love the school that I get to be a part of and the schools that I get to spend time with, and then just the educational professionals. And so I think sometimes I find myself more hopeful than the general kind of, you know, culture of our profession as a whole, maybe even right now. What gets you excited, you know, for what's happening today? Maybe not like the future, but what gets you excited when you go to work and when you see or when you interact with these schools? What gets you excited for what you get to do?
You know, and I think you're right. There's so much negative narrative, and it is unfortunate because I do get to meet a lot of adults and students who are really ready, you know, and really want to do the work and really want to dig in. And that's super exciting to have those conversations. Just in the last couple of weeks, we've been in some ideating planning sessions with superintendents and district level folks that I was just like, wow, you get it. You're after it. You've got some great ideas. Let's just figure out how to support you. There is a lot of really good things going on all over the nation. I think it's a matter of just persisting in the conversation. As many people could think bigger picture than sometimes we have the space in our brains to think, but pushing for that, that's exciting to me. I love the opportunity to talk with people about possibilities. And I think this is a great opportunity in our history, right? It's ripe for innovation. I think the thing that I would end with is most exciting is that part of our process is to talk to kids when we're doing this collaborative design work. So I've talked to a lot of kids in the last few years, and they are ready. I mean, they are really ready and are willing to dig into a different experience and help us with that. I mean, I think they know as much as anybody what would be meaningful and relevant and authentic for them. And so the more people we can get to listen to them and plan with them, the better, and that's a lot of fun to do.
Chris, I love these conversations, and I know I could keep going, but I really appreciate your thoughts, your, you know, just your professional wisdom, and then some of these experiences. So thank you.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I loved the conversation. I knew I would. So anytime, I'd be glad to continue.